On 100.1 FM, this is KMXT Kodiak. It is your public radio station. Stay tuned for the KMXT Midday Report. Currently 27 degrees in Kodiak under fair skies. Out at the airport, they are showing west winds at 16 miles per hour, gusting to 29, and they have 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day, high near 34, northwest winds to 25, gusting to 35 today. 30% chance of snow tonight after 1 a.m., increasing clouds overnight with a low of 27. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow before 7 a.m. with a chance of rain after that. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 46. Calm winds turning to the west to 5 by the morning. They are calling for mostly sunny skies on Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak voters will decide if the next city manager can live outside city limits. Your rates have increased for your electrical service. And work is scheduled to resume this month on a massive bridge that will span a slumping stretch of road into the Denali National Park. That, plus customers of a Kenai Peninsula meat shop are enjoying their first meat dispensing vending machine. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden has raised a series of concerns in his call today with China's President Xi Jinping, including fentanyl trafficking and Chinese support for Russia in its war with Ukraine. NPR's Tamara Keith reports it was the first call between the leaders since their meeting last November.
According to the White House, the conversation was candid and constructive. Spokesman John Kirby says, among other topics, Biden reiterated his concerns with the ownership of the popular social media company TikTok.
He made it clear to President Xi that this was not about a ban of the application, but rather our interest in divestiture, so that the national security interests and the data security of the American people can be protected.
The House has passed a bill requiring the Chinese company ByteDance to sell TikTok if the social media platform is to continue operating in the U.S. Biden has said he would sign it, but it's not clear if or when the Senate will take it up. Tamara Keith, NPR News, the White House.
A man's anguish over the death of a friend who was among seven aid workers killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza. The loss involving Chef Jose Andres' World Central Kitchen is reverberating around the globe. It's prompting condolences from the Israeli government, demands for an investigation by Israel's allies, and suspending the work of feeding civilians on the brink of famine in Gaza following months of fighting between Israel and Hamas militants. A pair of new studies shows just how costly it is to buy a home in the United States. NPR's Joe Hernandez reports real estate experts say many households will need a six-figure annual income to afford a typical home.
An analysis released by the website Zillow earlier this year found that house hunters would have to earn more than $106,000 annually to afford a median-priced home. This week, the financial website Bankrate said prospective buyers would need a $110,000 income. Those are major increases from similar estimates just 4 years ago. Mortgage rates are high, but with fewer homes on the market, housing prices keep rising. Meanwhile, experts say wages haven't increased at the same rate. Of course, those estimates are based on national data. The Bankrate study found that people in the South and Midwest would need to earn less to pay for new digs than those in the West and Northeast. Joe Hernandez, NPR News.
A storm system spanning several states has produced three suspected tornadoes in northeastern Oklahoma. Police say a 46-year-old woman who was unhoused died inside a drainage pipe, possibly from floodwaters. Storms also cut power to thousands of people in southwestern Indiana. Meanwhile, the National Weather Service projects 4 to 8 inches of snowfall over portions of Wisconsin. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak voters will decide if the next city manager will be able to live outside of the city, within 12 road miles of city limits. The proposed requirement change will be on the ballot for qualified voters at the upcoming election on October 1st. Currently, city code requires Kodiak's city manager to reside within city limits, but during last week's city council meeting, council members approved a resolution to alter that requirement. Council member Annika Woods says local residents should be involved in this process.
I want this before us, and assuming adoption, I'm glad that it'll go for the votership consideration. I think it's just something that we need to decide as a community.
All seven members voted in favor of putting the proposed change before the Kodiak voters in the fall. With current city manager Mike Tvenge likely leaving his position at the end of this month, the council is working to hire his replacement. For a temporary fill-in option, the city council is clarifying the role of an interim city manager and moved forward with an ordinance that would define the temporary manager's duties to the second reading and final vote. The ordinance could be approved and go into effect at the council's next regular meeting on April 11th. As of April 1st, the city manager job has not yet been posted on the city's employment site. Electric rates in Kodiak increased by 12.5% yesterday. That's after the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors approved the utility provider's first rate hike in 30 years at their last meeting last week. That means the average resident will see a monthly bill increase that costs about $12 more, according to the local utility. KEA's president and chief executive officer Darren Scott previously told KMXT the rate increase was needed due to inflation. The utility provider also anticipates decreasing revenue, mainly due to less electricity usage from fish processors in Kodiak. The local electric cooperative is also currently holding elections via mail-in ballots. Three board members are up for re-election this spring: Stosh Anderson, Michael C. Brecken, and Cliff Davidson. Completed ballots must be returned in the mail by April 19th. And Fossil Beach at the end of Kodiak Island's road system will be closed again tonight between 5 and 10 p.m. That's according to officials at the Pacific Spaceport Complex. It was also closed last night and on Friday night. Officials for the spaceport did not mention in their communications why the area will be closed, only saying it was for operations at the facility. Federal researchers indicate the gray whale population along the West Coast is showing signs of recovery 5 years after hundreds washed up dead on beaches from Alaska to Mexico. The increase in population numbers comes after the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration determined in November that the unusual mortality event that began in 2019 has ended. The agency has estimated the total number of eastern North Pacific gray whales to be between 17,000 to 21,000, a significant increase from just last year. NOAA researchers say the mortality event was due to ecosystem changes in the northern Bering and Chukchi Seas off northern Alaska, which changed access to and quality of prey. Work is scheduled to resume this month on a bridge that will cross a slumping stretch of the road into Denali National Park. The $100 million bridge will span 475 feet across a landslide at mile 45 in an area known as Pretty Rocks, where accelerated melting of a rock glacier has closed the road since August of 2021. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, significant progress was made during the project's first year.
During the summer of 2023, bridge project contractor Granite Construction built a work camp and staging areas, transported materials and equipment, and began site preparation that included blasting, excavation, slope stabilization, and pioneering a temporary heavy equipment access route across the Pretty Rocks landslide.
2023 was obviously a huge year for the project.
Park engineer Steve Mant reviewed last season's progress and previewed what's to come during a virtual town hall event last week. Mant said this spring's work will complete excavation on the west side of the slide, followed by construction of bridge abutments or foundations.
These foundations are composed of these large precast concrete blocks, so each of those blocks is 15 feet long, 4 feet wide, 4.5 feet thick. There's 13 of those per abutment. Each one of those is about 40,000 pounds of concrete. So this entire abutment is 52 feet long, 15 feet wide, and 4.5 feet thick. So it's a massive foundation that's going to be supporting each end of the bridge.
Mant said the abutments will be secured into solid underlying rock on either side of the slide.
Basically, it's a hole drilled into rock into which a steel bar is inserted, and then that's grouted in place.
Also this summer, Mant said the contractor will begin installation of thermosiphons, commonly used along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and some Alaska roads, to keep ice, underlying rock, and soil on the east side of the bridge from thawing.
We all know that climate is changing, and even recent trends in the park are showing just progressively warmer temperatures over time. So we want to make sure that that ice that ultimately is helping support the bridge, that ice remains frozen. So the thermosiphon is the tool that's going to be used to do that.
This season's work will also see construction of a platform on the east side abutment and the first third of the actual bridge.
So on that launch platform this year, the contractor is going to erect the first three bays of the bridge. So the first three sort of triangles of the truss will be assembled and sitting on that launch platform at the end of this construction season.
He said the rest of the bridge bays will be constructed on site in 2025, and then the entire structure will be pushed from the east side out over the slide to a receiving structure extended from the west abutment.
Progressively moved over to the west side. And then once that's done, that launch nose, that temporary truss will be removed. The truss will be lowered onto the foundation.
Bridge deck and guardrail installation are slated for summer of 2026, after which the bridge will open for park service and private inholder use. Park visitor buses are scheduled to begin transiting across the Pretty Rocks Bridge in the spring of 2027. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Bristol Bay communities are struggling with numerous overdoses as tens of thousands of lethal doses of opioids flow into the region. A group of community members in Dillingham are advocating for a united effort within the entire community to protect and help people recover. KDLG's Christina McDermott reports.
In January, Terry Mann stood in front of the Dillingham City Council and told the story of his daughter, Delana, who died from an overdose last May.
I don't want this thing to happen to anyone else. It's the toughest thing. The toughest thing I've ever continued to go through in my life is to lose a child.
In the meeting, he said the community desperately needs more behavioral health services, more education about the dangers of drug use, and easier access to care. Mann asked the city to support a group that he and a few other community members have formed. It doesn't have an official name yet, but it's a place where people can tell their stories and organize to advocate for a cohesive community response to fight overdose and drug misuse. Mann says he was blindsided by what happened to his daughter. Delana had just graduated with honors from Dillingham High School and would have studied at the University of Hawaii that fall. The night she died, she went for a drive, Mann says. When she didn't return or respond to his messages, he went looking for her. He says he thought the car might have broken down somewhere without phone signal. He says when he found her, he administered Narcan because he kept it on hand and started CPR.
By then, she had probably already passed, and I did try to save her life. Found her with tin foil.
Mann says his goal now is to reach out and help other families and community members so that they don't have to live through something similar.
I want to honor my daughter, and I don't want her death to be in vain.
Mann says the community needs to do more to address widespread drug use in the area. He says that since his daughter's death last May, three other teenagers with ties to Dillingham have fatally overdosed. And he says the risk is real for everyone. Longtime Dillingham EMT Malcolm Wright says that death from substance abuse is nothing new in Dillingham, but he says the synthetic opioid fentanyl has caused a spike in overdose deaths in recent years. Wright says the highly potent drug is fairly inexpensive and easy to access.
what's available, even though it looks like a commercial pill is of varying doses, and it's very hard to know how much one is taking, and it's mixed with other things.
After losing a loved one or community member to overdose, people may react differently, says Dillingham-based A.J. Knittle, a licensed professional counselor specializing in grief. He says some people may feel anger towards the people selling drugs. Others, he says, may feel a call toward making change. And he says that others still may feel a sense of apathy, which is sometimes used as a personal protection mechanism.
It could lead into being desensitized to it as well, where then it creates an expectation for the future where this is just normalized in our society, which we don't want to normalize overdose loss whatsoever.
Tiffany Webb is another member of the new community support and advocacy group. She says that stigma, judgment and shame towards those using drugs is one of the reasons people would rather die than ask for help. Webb has spent 5 years as the opioid overdose prevention coordinator at Kinakanak Hospital. She says she's working with the group as a citizen, not in an official role. Webb says that a person can't shame someone into getting better.
How we respond to our pain gets vilified a lot. We do it in our own families, to each other, but we also give labels to other people.
Holding a boundary, she says, while still communicating with a loved one is hard, but she says that's a healthier way to maintain a relationship with someone using drugs. Webb and her fellow group member Terry Mann say they want to see a united effort to address the opioid epidemic from organizations in the area, like the city, schools, tribes, the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, and other organizations like the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and the Bristol Bay Native Association. Webb says she wants to make the risk of drug use common household knowledge, and that will take a united effort. Recovery services need to be as easy to access as the drugs themselves, she says, and she says that with potent drugs like fentanyl, the community can't risk alienating anyone.
I know it's hard to hear about, I know it's hard to talk about, but we have to talk about this stuff through the tears and through the hurt, because if we don't, nothing's going to change.
For its next steps, the group, says Webb and Mann, is creating a working definition of what prevention means across the board, not just for specific organizations, so that everyone can have a common understanding. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium is suing the United States for over $8 million it claims it is owed for indirect costs in 2016. The expenses were incurred by the tribal health care provider for billing third-party private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court of Alaska on March 28th, the last day Search could litigate the eight-year-old dispute. It names the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the United States of America as co-defendants. In the suit, Search argues that the Indian Health Service failed to account for the indirect costs of managing third-party revenues when it reimbursed for expenses in 2016. Third-party revenues are the payments Search receives from private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. Although Search is primarily funded by the Indian Health Service under an agreement called the Alaska Tribal Health Compact, the lawsuit argues that the government is obligated to pay full contract support costs, and that, says Search, includes the expenses in billing third parties. Search's brief cites a number of U.S. Supreme Court rulings as justification for its claim, but the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the Indian Health Service, sees things differently. In a letter to Search, CEO Charles Clement last year rejecting the claim, the department wrote the IHS paid Search almost $59 million in 2016, including over $3 million for contract support costs and $17 million for indirect contract support costs. It states, "Nothing in the party's compact or funding agreement includes an agreement that contract support costs include any expenditures other than the amount identified in the compact."
The department goes on to say that search supplied no evidence or documentation that it is owed an additional $8 million for the costs it incurred through billing private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. Search is being represented by the Anchorage law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman. The secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has 60 days to reply to the suit. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For the first time in history, a Juneau high school swimmer has qualified to compete in the Olympic team trials. As reported by KTOO, Thunder Mountain High School senior P.J. Foy achieved the milestone after hitting a personal best in the 100-meter butterfly last month in Washington. According to Foy, it took him a while to figure out he'd actually done it.
I'm not going to lie. It took me a while to figure that out because I read the time wrong. So it took me a while. But I was just really happy. And all I wanted to do was get out of the pool and hug my parents and my coach because without them, I wouldn't have been able to do this.
In June, he will head to Indianapolis to compete alongside some of the best swimmers in the country. Foy, who is 18 years old, holds multiple swim records in the state. After graduating high school in Juneau this May, he will be heading to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill to compete on its swim team. Before Foy, the last Alaskan to make it to the trials was Seward's Lydia Jacoby. In 2021, she became the first Alaskan-born swimmer to win a medal in the Olympics. Foy says he worked hard to make it to the trials and feels extremely good.
It means a lot. I've been doing my best to represent the swim community since I started high school, and it's been an honor to be able to represent everybody in this way.
The Olympic team trials will take place between June 15th and the 23rd.
General Electric ends its run as an industrial conglomerate. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. GE completed its years-long breakup today as its aerospace and energy division started trading as separate companies on the New York Stock Exchange. Its healthcare division split off more than a year ago. GE sold its light bulb business in 2020. The Labor Department's latest survey of job openings and labor turnover shows little change, with openings totaling nearly 9 million, historically high. The number of people quitting also changed little. The Federal Communications Commission says 23 million households are in danger of losing subsidies to help pay for broadband internet access. The program is running out of money. The White House has asked Congress for another $6 billion, but lawmakers have not acted. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the second day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 7:32. It will set again at 8:54, giving us 13 hours and 21 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 59 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 53 degrees set in 1954, and a record low was 10 degrees set in 1944. Currently 30 degrees in Kodiak. It is fair and breezy. It has been fair and breezy all day long. At the airport, they now have west winds steady at 21, gusting to 28 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 34. Northwest winds to 25, gusting to 35. 30% chance of snow after 1 a.m. tonight, though, with increasing clouds as the night goes on and a low of 27. Northwest winds to 10, becoming light and westerly in the evening. For tomorrow, a chance of rain and snow before 7 a.m., then a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 40. Calm winds becoming west around 5 miles per hour tomorrow morning. And for Thursday, look for just a 30% chance of rain. Friday, they're calling for mostly sunny skies. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 3:22 this afternoon and be a 1-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:39 p.m. of 5.2 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 3:42 p.m. and be 1.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:30 p.m. of 9.3 feet.
Confish Alaska takes place April 11th through 13th at the Kodiak Marketplace on Thursday and Friday from 10 to 4 and Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. The forums will be held at the Best Western Kodiak Inn in the Harbor Room Thursday through Saturday. Learn the latest news and information in the industry during the forums and visit Alaska's largest commercial fishing trade show. Find out more at confishak.com. Brought to you by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce.
Confish is coming. Mariners, be aware we have a gale warning today for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, northwest 35 today, seas to 7 feet with freezing spray. For tomorrow, southwest 20 and seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow night, southwest 25, seas coming up to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today. West winds to 40 knots, should come down to 25 or so this afternoon, but look for gusts of 50 knots out of bays and passes. 8-foot seas are expected to subside to 5 feet this afternoon, but look for freezing spray all day in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. Thursday through Friday in the Shelikof, west 25 and 6-foot seas. In Chiniak Bay, look for a small craft advisory today with northwest winds to 30, gusting to 45, and freezing spray out there today in Chiniak Bay. For tomorrow, south 10 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 with 2-foot seas. The Women's Bay Service Area regular board meeting will be occurring in the Women's Bay Fire Hall tonight. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. The Hazard Mitigation Plan update will be meeting via Zoom. That's happening at 6 p.m. tonight. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And next Tuesday, on April 9th, Service Area Number 1 Board will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public. Meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Things are happening at the library, including tomorrow's edition of the famous Lego Club. That happens at 3:30 p.m. every Wednesday. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Also, this Wednesday is the Zoom Trivia, 6:30 p.m. All are welcome to join in the fun, and you can do it easily. Find the link at the Kodiak Island, at the Kodiak Public Library's website. Look under the What's Happening at KPL tab. And on Thursday, the next chess club gathering will be happening at 3 p.m. Canna's Elder Storytime is Friday, April 5th at 10:30 a.m. And the animated movie Balto, highlighting the history of the Iditarod, will be shown on Friday at 3:30 p.m. Runtime is 78 minutes. It's rated G. And a special treat, Cindy Lou Ilaud, author of Recess at 20 Below, will be at the library from 1 p.m. on April 6th, on Saturday, that is. This event is sponsored by the Kodiak Island Borough School District, so that's pretty exciting. The author of Recess at 20 Below will be at the library 1 p.m. on Saturday. For more information about any of this, call the library at 907-486-8686. And it's coming up this next Friday, the next Galley Tables. It's happening at the Kodiak Marketplace Friday at 7 p.m. And the theme of the Galley Tables this week, Call of the Wild. Should be a good one. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is offering yoga for grieving bodies. Sometimes there are no words to touch the complexity and depth of what we are feeling. This one-day workshop uses gentle stretches and a focus on breathing to create a bridge between what is felt inside and what is happening outside. That's happening Sunday, April 7th, this coming Sunday, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. at the 100th Monkey Yoga Studio, the 100th Monkey Yoga Studio. Register at www.hpck.org. or call them on the phone at 907-512-0600. Again, that's happening next Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 512-0600.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.